On this Sunday of the Holy Myrrh-Bearing Woman, I want to speak with you about how to continue as a follower of Jesus in time of crisis. Thomas was not the only one who was utterly emotionally devastated by what they had just witnessed. All of the followers of Jesus Christ, all of them, could not have done anything but react with utter and unspeakable horror as they saw this man whom they had invested, some of them, 3 or more years of their lives in, whom they had followed with absolute confidence that this was the Christ, this was the Messiah, this was the one who was going to deliver Israel, and then to see him taken by the leaders of their own people, turned over to the Romans, and crucified like any common slave or rebel. And nothing happened. At this moment, there was no reason to continue as a follower of Jesus. I don't even say Jesus Christ, because at this point, as far as they understood it, they had been wrong. He wasn't the anointed one of God. He wasn't the Christ. He wasn't even the Messiah. He was just somebody who had, well, they weren't sure what to make of it at this point, but had been unjustly and horribly put to death as a criminal. He was outside the law, hanged with rebels and thieves. And they, if they were going to continue to associate with him, were next on the list. And it's in this moment that Joseph of Arimathea steps forward and asks Pilate if he can have the body of Jesus. And it's in this moment that Mary Magdalene, Mary the mothers of James and Salome prepare the spices, buy and prepare the spices and take them to the tomb to anoint the body of this condemned criminal. Why would they do it? When we're in emotional crisis, when we have faced catastrophe and calamity, if you've ever faced this, you know life is drained of its joy, drained of its meaning. It all seems senseless, hopeless. It's paralyzing. And indeed, most of the disciples were paralyzed. They basically just ran and hid. But not Joseph. But not the myrrh-bearing women. What sustained them? We don't have a lot to go on in the gospel readings about this, but it seems to me that if we look at what they are doing, the myrrh-bearing women in particular are just continuing. They're just continuing on, doing what they had done the whole time that Jesus was alive. These were the women who followed Jesus, who looked after his needs. And he had one need left. And they were going to look after that one too. And even with Joseph, whose behavior is in some respects really odd. This would be a really good time to not reveal that you are a follower of Jesus. Even he, in his method, does what Jesus teaches. As Jesus said, his kingdom is not of this world. If it was, his followers would come armed in rebellion and would fight. But Joseph just goes through the proper government channels, makes sure all the paperwork is filed, and Pilate does, you know, the right due diligence. Is he dead yet? How long has he been dead? And then he gets the body of Jesus handed over to him. And he takes it down, and he puts it in his own new, unused tomb. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, note where this is. And note that there's a large stone rolled in front of the tomb. But don't note that so well that when they come back at sunrise, earliest possible moment that they could come, they're wondering, what are we going to do? Who's going to roll the stone back from the tomb for us? I think we can learn from Joseph and the myrrh-bearing women in a number of ways. One, we all will face crisis in our lives. Sometimes it's a crisis of faith. Sometimes we look around and we see that the world doesn't believe in this man Jesus. The world will do everything in its power to get rid of him. Or sometimes it's just a crisis, a personal crisis. We're overwhelmed. We have no more emotional energy to spend. It seems impossible to carry on. And I think it's at this moment that all of the stuff that we have been encouraged to do by the tradition of Jesus' teachings that has been handed down to us from the apostles through the church. It's at this moment that these simple routines strengthen and preserve us. The rule of prayer. It's something simple. It's supposed to be as routine as we can make it. And in those times of crisis, whether that be a crisis of faith or just, as I say, an emotional crisis, a personal crisis, we need to continue in that. We may feel completely dead. We may be reciting the words as rote as they have ever been in our lives. But we need to continue in that in the same way that the myrrh-bearing women just did what was next. It might not even be something well planned out. I was like, oh, what prayer should I add this time? Don't worry about it. Just pray. Don't worry about it. Just do. Which brings us to the next thing. Jesus tells us that inasmuch as you have opportunity to do good to all men, this is what defines us as his followers. In those times of crisis, we may not feel like doing it. We may not feel like doing anything. But if we look around and our hand finds something to do, we should do it with all our might, as the proverb says. Whatever that be, the next thing, continue. We may be tempted in these time of crisis to look around and curse the world, curse the system. It's corrupt. It has done evil, horrible, unspeakable things. But this is not what we see Jesus' followers doing. At this point, when they had the most reason to do it, Joseph goes through the proper government channels, even though this was the guy who put Jesus to death. He applies to him to have the body of Jesus transferred to his care. And what we see happening as Jesus' disciples keep following Jesus in this time of crisis, in this time when it seems to be absolutely worth absolutely nothing to follow him, we find the resurrection. We find the blessing of God. Joseph is given the body of Jesus. He has the opportunity to treat it with the honor it deserves. And he does everything in his power to do that, and he then lays it in a brand new tomb. He succeeds. The Myrrh-bearing women actually don't succeed in their mission. They're going to anoint the body of Jesus. It's not a very well planned out mission. I haven't even figured out who's going to roll the stone away. But when they get there, they find the stone rolled away, but no body to anoint with the spices. Instead, they find someone dressed in white, sitting at the right hand of the entrance to the tomb, saying, "You seek Jesus of Nazareth, he's not here, he is risen." And what do? They'd run away, and they don't tell anybody anything because they were afraid. If we read the other Gospels, we realize, no, they didn't tell anybody in public anything. They did tell the disciples, and the disciples didn't believe them. And then, of course, as we saw last Sunday, Jesus appears to them. And we too, as we continue as followers of Jesus, in the midst of crisis, we too will experience success or failure, but in the end, neither of those ultimately matter. What matters is that as we continue as followers of Jesus, we encounter him. We realize he is alive. We see him at work. We realize that this world and its corrupt system is passing away. That there is a new and higher reality that is at work and that is infusing it. And that we get glimpses of as we continue as his followers. Our job is pretty simple. Be faithful. Keep up the routines. Stick with Jesus, even when nobody else is. And as we do this, as we begin to see him, his presence, infusing the whole world, his life transforming ours, his resurrection power at work, so we are able to stay with the myrrh-bearing women, as they said to the apostles, with the followers of Jesus down through the ages, to say as a cry against the corruption and the horror that is sin in this world, that Jesus is the Christ. He is the promised one of God. That Jesus is not abandoned to the grave, because God would not let his Holy One experience corruption. That Jesus is Lord. That Jesus is God. And that he, the Christ, is risen.